This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Brock Rahm.
It's all the things when I was starting out that nobody told me or talked about.
And Darius Thomas.
Yeah, we know firsthand how that goes.
You name it, Brittany Alvarado has been through it. She's the video and creative manager for the San Diego Wave and previously spent time getting Charlotte FC up and running. Soccer is a big part of her life, but more importantly, what stokes her fire is the opportunity to humanize athletes by capturing their stories.
Yeah, let's clap on 45.
All right.
That was late.
Never know what we're going to get. It's like a box
of chocolates. Yeah. Forrest Gump.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Excited to have Brittany Alvarado, the video and creative manager for San Diego Wave FC, joining us today, our last episode of Pride Month. And Brittany, thank you so much for joining us and taking the time to share your journey and your perspective on the sports industry with us today.
Thanks, fellas. I know it was a little hard to track me down, but I'm happy to be here on this beautiful Friday.
Well, you are in the middle of the season, so we understand all that goes into it and appreciate you making the time. I've noticed in everything that you've done that soccer is a big part of your background. Can you dive in and talk to us about how you got into sports and Olympic sports? Because I also feel like I've seen a lot of comments, especially on Twitter lately, that talk about, hey, Olympic sports are a great entry point for people. As someone who has spent a lot of time doing different sports, can you talk about that experience and the background that you have that has led you to where you are today?
For sure. The funniest thing about me being in soccer is that I never played it in my life. I played every single other sport, volleyball, softball, basketball, even told you guys that I ended my athletic career as a field hockey goalkeeper in college, which is insane looking back on it. But it was honestly I always get my years mixed up. I believe it was 2015, where Abby Wambach hit the header against Brazil. Megan Rapinoe served it in, and it was like the dying minutes of the World Cup. And that was like the moment I fell in love with the women's national team. I think a lot of people who got into soccer probably looked to that team for the inspiration, especially now with it being a World Cup year. But you know, lucky for me, a team, Sky Blue FC, they've now rebranded to Gotham, literally played at Rutgers University, right around the corner from my house, my childhood home. So I was able to, you know, be a wide-eyed college grad who just wanted to dive in and do journalism in any way. And I think for me, and a lot of people will say this about soccer specifically, I would bet, is just kind of the accessibility and connection that you had specifically to NWSL players. And maybe it was because it was early times of the league and the league had failed twice before. And so, you know, these athletes were just more catered to opening up and being more willing to make connections. But, you know, just being able to, after matches, get out my recorder, have questions to talk to the athletes with and have some of them be really just like engaged with me. I think that was the moment where I was like, okay, this is where I want to be. And of course, you know, the NWSL has come a long way since then. So the opportunities were far and few between to where I'm at now. But I think that was really the point of me wanting to keep pursuing soccer. And then fast forwarding to Clemson, obviously Clemson football is everything. And everyone knows Clemson football around this country and in Clemson itself. And I was really excited for the opportunity to be around that. However, I was most excited to work with the soccer teams. And, you know, Clemson soccer on the men's side and women's side are super successful. The men having won the national championship 2 years ago. So I think also I found even in college athletics that those players, the Olympic sport athletes, were just more open and willing. And for me, their stories are the ones that are usually untold. And that's kind of been my passion that's fueled me throughout my whole career, is who are the athletes not getting the most attention? Because the amount of stories that are just sitting there waiting to be told, whether it's through a graphic, for me, it's through video or photo, let's amplify them. And honestly, I think just being around the team and them learning about me and me learning about them just created a mutual respect. And then that's where you get access, right? Like when you have that trust between team, players, creative, that's when you get the vulnerability, and that's when you're able to open up different, you know, avenues. So yeah, it was great. I think, you know, of course there's always debates in the sports community about, you know, football and Olympic sports. I think any avenue's a great opportunity, but I think because a lot of the spotlight is on football, that, you know, having the opportunity to work with a team that doesn't necessarily get that all the time can really make you stand out. And honestly, I think the athletes on those teams appreciate it, you know, 100 times more.
So as far as you, and you mentioned when you were a reporter, you know, standing around waiting for the NWSL players and you had access to them, it looks like you've done some reporting, you've been on camera, you've done some writing, you're now in video production. How did that evolutionary process happen for you in your career? And how did you make that decision that this is what you wanted to do?
Yeah, it's crazy to hear you explain it like that, because I've literally bounced around doing so many different things. So my senior year of college, I had a class where we were tasked to do, I think, 3 or 4 sports documentaries, just to kind of dive into long form and learn how to do that, sit down interviews. And the first one that I did was on a women's basketball player, and I'll always tell this story. She opened up about mental health, depression, anxiety, kind of what she was going through early on in her collegiate career and how it affected her on and off the court. And so once I put that all together, granted, I was nowhere near as good as I am now. So it's funny to see my creative growth from then. But once the story got put out into the world, the video, her and I both just got numerous messages from, you know, classmates, fellow athletes, people who were just following her or the sport or Division III basketball. And they're like, wow, I can relate to this. And it's crazy she went through this, because I also had similar struggles. So for me to see that, and then, you know, obviously as a looming college grad, it was like, okay, this is something that is sparking a fire, and I think that I'd want to pursue this. So of course we all know equipment's expensive, so I couldn't necessarily just, you know, graduate and buy all this expensive video equipment. So that's when I had the opportunity and the platform to just, you know, interview athletes and listen back to the audio, transcribe it, and then write. I am definitely, I can say that I'm definitely not a writer. And I think at this stage, I would hate to write these stories. But once I was able to afford my camera equipment, shout out my parents for supporting me in that way. I was able to, you know, get like a cheap lav mic, cheap tripod, and then start turning the page to doing these as video interviews. And I think the biggest one for me early on in my career was interviewing Ashlyn Harris. And she had opened up about mental health and her struggles early on in her career. And she was someone that a lot of people in the women's soccer world know and look to in that way. So just seeing, you know, people say this saved my life, or, you know, this had an impact on me. That was honestly like, I knew that I was doing what I loved and what I was meant to do. So yeah, it's been a crazy journey, but I'm really glad that I have the opportunity to use my skill set to, you know, provide a platform for everyday people or athletes. I just happen to be working in the sports world, but I just love humanizing everyone and giving them opportunities to tell their stories.
So you're at Clemson, you're at Charlotte FC, you're now in California. When did it really click for you that you wanted to do this for a long time or at all?
When did it click? I think it goes back to, you know, you guys asked me what my most memorable moment was in my career. And I mean, I could be here for hours and tell you all the special moments that I've had, but I think just the impact that I can see and feel with the work that I do, makes me know that this is what I want to do for a long time. And just like the relationships and connections I've been able to make, like I've met so many people from all over the world, from different countries. Like I've been introduced to so many different cultures and languages. And that's something that I wish I could speak so many different languages. But, you know, at Charlotte FC, we had so many native Spanish speakers. And so like just being able day to day to just communicate with them through body language and smiles and, you know, seeing them try to learn English and me trying to speak Spanish to them. It's moments like that that I don't know that you get that very many places of being embedded with other cultures. And, you know, now I can say I have friends that I can visit in Croatia or England and all these different countries. And that's something that's so priceless to me. And I, again, and you'll hear me say this a million times, like a broken record, like human connection to like really ignites my fire and makes me so passionate about this. And I always say, you know, when I was growing up, like I wish that I had, you know, a platform or an opportunity to tell my story. So it's like now that I have the opportunity to do so for other people, like why wouldn't I lift them up or try to do that with what I do? So yeah, there's days where, you know, the sports industry is really hard on us. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of us have thought about, you know, if you work in full-time sports, going freelance or just, you know, leaving sports flat out. But honestly, guys, like I can't see myself doing anything else but this, like no matter what hardships I've experienced in this industry and my journey, like I still go back to all the relationships I've made. And I know that I wouldn't have them without, you know, my journey and where what stops I've made. I'm so thankful for that. Like I can't even put it into words.
Can you speak a little bit about your storytelling style and where you pull inspiration from for your storytelling and how you would describe that?
I remember the two platforms that I used to watch religiously and still to this day I keep up with. I used to watch E60 episodes all the time. And then the Players Tribune is another outlet that I've always looked to, just the way they storytell. And to me, I'm very simplistic, and you know, we're in the age of a lot of cool effects and hype videos, and I love to see those on my timeline. But for me, actual stories of impact are timeless to me. You know, like we see a cool edit, and then it's on to the next one, right? But I go back to documentaries, and I go back to stories from years ago that I just want to rewatch. So I think for me, it's just first building rapport and a good relationship with whoever, you know, I want to storytell around, and then, you know, developing that to the point where I'm sitting down to interview them, you know, they're comfortable and able to be open and vulnerable with me. And I think just my questions are always going to be deep, right? Because I feel like we don't normally always want to dive deep, but I feel like if we're given the opportunity to do so and we feel comfortable enough doing so, we will. So yeah, for me, it's just building trust, you know, asking questions that are different from, you know, what's typically being asked every day by reporters. And honestly, just listening, giving whoever it is the mic, and I'm here to listen. And then, you know, like y'all, when you're doing a podcast, you know, following up on things that maybe could open up another avenue or another chapter of their story.
With that being said, you bring up a great point about how it's easy to just follow the trend and follow what's hot and, you know, do what everybody else does. But it takes I wouldn't say necessarily a special person, but it takes kind of some guts in a sense to take the road less traveled. Why do you think that is more attractive or more like that works better for you to kind of go in that lane to actually storytell? And does that come from your background of having some experience with writing?
Yeah, that's a great question. It does take guts, right? And, you know, I'll be the first to admit that, like, Adobe After Effects, that program is scary for a lot of us. And so I give so much props to any creative that can turn out, you know, hype edits and cool motion graphics, because that is not my expertise, but I give so much credit to those that do that. But yeah, I mean, I just think because straight out the gates, I got embedded with the platform. It doesn't exist today, but you know, I had met another woman with similar passions as me, and she created a platform called Purpose to Play. And the whole overarching values of the company at the time was just humanizing and connecting and telling the untold stories. So I think because that was my beginning, that's my mentality going into everything that I do. And for me, for whatever reason, just connecting with people is my superpower. So like, why wouldn't I lean into that to create, right? And I think also what I've been through in my life, and you know, I feel like everyone has overcome something, has been through struggles, has had triumphs. You know, for me, like being a cancer survivor has allowed me to connect with, you know, people who have had cancer on any level. And I've met soccer players that are cancer survivors, and I've been able to, you know, have a deeper connection in that way. You know, being a part of the LGBTQ plus community, you know, I've been able to develop authentic relationships with, you know, people I work with other athletes who identify in that way. So I don't know. I just, I'm a sponge for storytelling. I'm a sponge for hearing, you know, what other people have been through. And I think honestly, like that's just what makes me stand out in this industry is just, I think, you know, you could talk to anyone I've worked with, athlete or coworker, and, you know, I would hope that they'd say that they felt supported and felt heard and felt like they had someone that they could relate to and provided the opportunity for them to pour into me whatever they'd want. So, yeah, it's definitely easy, I think, to get in your head and feel like, why can't I do this? Or like, why am I not able to execute a video like this or whatever it is? But like I said, lean into what makes you great and don't try and fit molds of other people, because I think that's what this industry is all about. If we're all doing the same thing, then it'd be so boring. You know, like we wouldn't be able to have these conversations. But yeah, just go be great, be yourself and be authentic. That's what's driven me through my career. And I think that would be my advice to anyone listening who's trying to be in this industry or who's in it right now.
Storytelling. That takes, you know, you talked about After Effects taking special skills. I also think that storytelling is a gift. Everyone can't do it. When you're doing a story, humanizing people, what helps you not getting in the way of the story and how do you kind of navigate through an interview to help them tell their story without getting in the way as the content creator?
Well, I think preparation is key, and something I did early on and even now is sometimes you have to go to Google page 21 and find this article that was written by a local beat writer that, you know, had them open up about a specific story that wasn't necessarily given national attention. So sometimes it's diving deep and finding things that you can touch on. So for me, it's the preparation in that way. I think for the most part, you know, when I'm with athletes, usually, you know, the career and their athletic journey is in there, but you know, what is it about them off the court, off the pitch, whatever it is, that we can, you know, make this story about, even if it's like overcoming an injury, right? Because that comes with mental health and that comes with, you know, preparing physically. So there's different parts of the athletic journey that we can dive into. So preparation is key, and just being ready to have questions, but also being able to listen to their responses and then being able to follow up on that, because they could say something that you didn't necessarily research, but following up will open up, you know, again, like another chapter, and then you get, you know, exclusivity from following up with that. So yeah, I think that just allows me to storytell around it. And I like to let the interview breathe, and I don't like to cut too much, because I think, you know, if you're chopping up people's words, it's inauthentic. So yeah, preparation is key. And again, I think the biggest part is just the comfortability and making sure that you have a good relationship, or at least some kind of, you know, trust developed, even if it's like a quick meeting, just something that they know that they can trust you, and that it's going somewhere, you know, that has good intentions.
You said a key word there in following up on responses with more questions. you talked about building trust, and I know that can be a difficult thing depending on the organization, the team, the players. What's your approach to building trust with an athlete when you're trying to tell their story, especially something that could be deeply personal to them? What's your approach to that?
Yeah, and it definitely varies. You know, having worked in college athletics with professional male players, professional women players, I think it's showing up, and for me, it's just showing up with a smile. And even, you know, when I'm having a tough day, when I'm there, like, I'm present, right? And just being approachable. But also, like, it comes with time, right? So, you know, last year with Charlotte, we were meeting these guys for the first time, basically on day one of training. And so no one knew who I was, no one knew who we were, but I was there pretty much every single day, saying hi, smiling. And then, you know, it grows from there. You just have little side conversations, ask them about their family, friends. And I think that's where connection can develop, because, you know, I'm not a professional athlete, they are, so there isn't a connection there, but what around them, can I, you know, relate to then, you know, talk to them further about, you know, themselves. So it definitely is an overtime thing. I found with the Wave that this team is just super approachable and friendly, and just easygoing, and that makes things easy. I think the guys at Charlotte were the same as well. So, and honestly though, like, if you work for a team, everyone knows, like, you're around that team more than you're around your friends, your family, and anywhere in the outside world. So naturally, you know, relationships are going to develop, and that obviously helps with content creation. And I think you can see, in videos that I've edited in the past, that, you know, it's me behind the camera because of the way they're reacting, to it. So yeah, it's super important to me. So, you know, whatever it takes, it's definitely, you can't be forceful about it. It just kind of has to come naturally. But I mean, when you're around the team and, you know, you're with them in the highs and lows, like, you're on the bus, on the plane after a loss, you know, you're in the locker room before the match. So I think trust is built in that way, when the team is seeing you in those moments. And then, you know, obviously being able to be open myself to, you know, sharing my story and my life and just help them connect with me in any way. So long-winded answer, like all of my answers have been. But yeah, no, that's super important. And because it's something that I care so deeply about, I definitely feel like I'm good at it. But I think that's something that helps me storytell.
You brought up two things. One being diagnosed with thyroid cancer and being a cancer survivor and being a part of the LGBTQ community. Let's talk about the cancer diagnosis and how you dealt with that and navigated through your career while also dealing with something so personal like that.
Yeah, this came basically in the beginning of my career, because once I graduated college, they did all this testing on my thyroid. I went for a physical and I was losing weight rapidly. I was sleeping all the time. My parents were pissed off at me because it was summertime and I was waking up late and being moody and lazy. But obviously, you know, I went to go get tested to see what was going on, and my thyroid levels were super high. So I was diagnosed as hyperthyroid, which meant that, you know, my body was overheating. I was super tired. I could not gain weight for the life of me. And that was going into my senior year of playing field hockey. So you can imagine how hard that was to, you know, the year before I was in the best shape of my life. And then this completely, you know, took me by storm. And I honestly, y'all, I didn't even know what a thyroid was. I was like, what is this thing? And I had to do some research. And, you know, I remember actually Googling if any athletes had thyroid cancer and if they were able to play their sport, because I was so worried that I was not going to be able to play. And that's all I knew at that point. Like, school was one thing, but I was just sports over everything, like even in high school. So, you know, I made it through my senior year. Definitely wasn't easy. And then once I graduated, they were basically like, we're pretty sure it's cancer. So like, we have to get, you know, this out of your body. So scheduled surgery for August of 2014. And then, you know, once I went through the surgery, they took out my whole thyroid and the lymph nodes on the left side of my neck were cancerous. And they confirmed that with pathology testing after the surgery. So now every day, I mean, I told you guys, like, I'm heading into 9 years clean. But, you know, every day I have to take, you know, a small little pill that acts as, you know, a thyroid hormone. And, you know, for the first couple of years, it was super hard because you basically are trying to get on a certain level to pretend that it's your thyroid. So you're going through different doses of meds, like, for a couple of years. And I had to do radiation twice, which was basically eating like a radioactive capsule. And then I had to go home and isolate myself for 72 hours, two times. I know, I see the pouting, but I was literally just in my room, I think, playing video games and just being whatever a college grad would do. But that obviously was life-changing for me. And, you know, at the time, I was still in my beginnings in the NWSL. And actually, a great story out of that is one of the athletes I interviewed, Jillian Lloyden, she's retired now, but she was playing for Sky Blue at the time. And I had happened to interview her earlier on in the summer. And I was helping her with her foundation work after that. She called me the morning of my surgery and was just like, you got this, like, I'm here for you, like, whatever you need. And that was, again, the moment I was like, this sport is incredible that, you know, here's a professional athlete that I've only known for a couple months, but I've made an impact on her enough to be calling me, you know, before my surgery, right? And I don't even think at that time I had her number saved. Like, she found my number. So, yeah, it was life-changing, and it's definitely changed my perspective on life. And I think I still endure struggles just from not having a thyroid, and that's just something that I've grown to accept, even though it's not easy. But I think because I've experienced that, it just gives me another reason to connect with other people and to have like a why. So yeah, I mean, talking about it is super surreal, because now it's kind of just like I take meds and usually get like blood work once a year just to make sure everything's good. Now that I'm at this stage, but yeah, I think I don't know. I feel like I wouldn't have written my story any other way. And yeah, does it suck to go through what I went through? But, you know, there's so many people who go through, you know, struggles. And I think that just, I don't know, it makes me more empathetic in a lot of ways. Not that I wasn't empathetic before this, but yeah, it just does something to you, right? It just changes your mindset.
Yeah, I mean, I guess just listening to you talk about that, it almost makes sense why you're so focused on people and humanizing athletes to try and help tell their stories, whether that's on the field or off, because of your experience. So that's super cool that was something that came out, that you were able to make it a positive.
Thanks, Justin.
So you also say on your site that your goal is always to showcase emotions and capture what makes people feel alive, which kind of fits what you were just talking about. I'm wondering how do you approach that when it comes to capturing those moments, whether it's in your interviews or whether you're out on a shoot? How do you go about approaching the capture and setting yourself up to be able to tell that story appropriately?
Yeah. I think back to Clemson and being with the women's soccer team. And before every match, most of the players, if not all, would go to certain spots on the field where they played or just somewhere they felt compelled to go to. They'd have their headphones in and they'd sit there and they would just envision or just have a moment with themselves. When I saw this happen for the first time, didn't think anything of it. Didn't see us capitalize on it at the time. And I was like, how great would it be if we just had portraits of these moments, of them locking in, just having these quiet moments before the match. And so I think it was when we played at UNC, I just happened to grab pictures of them and super quickly edit them and send them to Megan, ironically. Dream team with Clemson women's soccer right there. Me and Megan Fraser gotta give her a shout out for what she did for that platform. But and then that became a thing, right? And people loved it, and it's actually something that's continuing to be taken. The pictures are continuing to be taken despite us not being there. But that was a thing. It's like we all strive for getting the money shot, right? The touchdown, the goal, whatever it might be. And of course, I love that. Like, I love capturing that. Like, capturing a soccer goal is one of the most exhilarating, you know, times of my career, anytime I get to do that. But, you know, for me, it's like, just take a look around and find, you know, emotion and storytelling elsewhere. Like, you know, there's so much young support for soccer in the NWSL. So I actually think there was a clip this year when we were in Houston and some little girl, like most little girls, freaked out because Alex Morgan was coming over to sign autographs. And she just started bawling. She just started crying her eyes out. She got her Croc signed and she was just like the happiest girl ever. So it's like moments like that performed better than the goal that we scored in the match, you know? And I think it's because, you know, a lot of people can relate to that. And a lot of people just love seeing moments like that. Like we live in a harsh and pretty dark world right now. Like, let's be honest, like it's a lot of negativity that surrounds us. So, you know, for me, like, what's going to bring joy to someone, whether it's the people in the video, the people watching the video, so I think for me, pregame moments are some of my favorite. Just like when an athlete is with themselves, whether, you know, they're praying or they're listening to music or they're taping up, you know, their ankles, their hands. Like, those are the moments that I think illustrate emotion and what goes into whatever craft it might be. So I just say, take a look around every once in a while. It's not always the goal shot that you're looking to get. Like, it could be you shooting from the opposite field and, you know, we score a goal and our defender drops to his knees because he's so excited that we scored in a battle of a game. So there's just different ways that you can capture emotion, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the moment that every single camera is on. So you got to find ways to do what other people aren't doing, and you know, capture different angles.
So, as we all know, June is Pride Month. You're a member of the LGBTQIA plus community. Talk about what it's like for you, your experience with that, and how all of that came to be for you.
Well, early on in my career, so when I moved down to Orlando, Orlando was the first city that I had moved to. I'm from New Jersey, so I accepted a job with Orlando City and Orlando Pride. That feels like ages ago. So that was like my first big move away from home. You know, at the time I was still kind of not sure about my sexuality, but more so just like I think I was just like scared to be open about it. So it was still kind of it was a hidden part of myself. But, you know, moving out of your parents' house, you know, obviously provides a lot more freedom to, you know, be yourself a bit. And I think Orlando helped me in that way because, you know, a lot of the players on the team were openly out. So, you know, being able to be around that and being able to see people succeed being themselves, I think helped me become more comfortable. And then, you know, a moment that impacted me was the Pulse nightclub shooting, which actually happened when I was working for Orlando, which was an insane thing to be in a city that, you know, had a mass shooting. And, you know, Pulse was, you know, 10 minutes from where I was living. And so just to see one, the world rally around the LGBTQ community, two, to see our team rally around them and to do so many things for the city of Orlando. That was like, why wouldn't I be myself? Like, why would I hide this part of myself when these people, you know, this happened to these people who were just trying to be themselves? So that was a big life impact moment for me. And ironically, I ended up meeting my current fiance in Orlando on Tinder. Shout out, you know, the dating app. So I don't know if my pathway or my journey would have been the same if I wasn't in Orlando. And obviously, I met her, so that says a lot. But I think also, you know, being at Clemson, which obviously is in the South, and I met a lot of LGBTQ athletes who weren't necessarily comfortable being out and you know, open about their sexuality. And I think just having, you know, someone like me or Megan, you know, as part of the team, or just being in the athletic department and seeing, you know, someone they could relate to and identify the same way as, like, that is such a cool thing, right? It's something you don't really think of in the moment, but, you know, when I was at Clemson, we had one of the softball players, her and I, like, helped put together coming out stories, and we let, you know, coaches and athletes who were comfortable speaking about their coming out stories just sit in front of a camera and tell their story. And we edited all of them. They were able to share them. We put it on our YouTube channel. And I think for a school like Clemson, you know, that was big, you know, to allow us to have that platform. And so I think I've come more into my own by working in athletics. And I obviously, you know, I'm 30 now and I'm, you know, kind of a veteran of this industry at this stage. So to be a leader and to, you know, have my peers or, you know, direct reports or whoever I work with, like, you know, maybe they're in my shoes like I was, you know, however many years ago, of like questioning or not feeling like they can be themselves. But, you know, if I can be that person to help them, then I'm going to be that. And so I think being a part of this community, again, just fuels my fire even more. And I hope that, you know, anyone who doesn't feel like they can be themselves can look to me or know that they can talk to me or, you know, ask questions, because it wasn't always perfect for me either. But I wouldn't change who I am. I wouldn't change my journey. And I'm thankful that, you know, I'm part of this community and I get to work with such incredible people and athletes that are also proud to be themselves.
All right, so I have a million questions, but I'll only ask one and let Justin and Brock jump in. One being that experience that you talked about being in Orlando in a culture where being open was encouraged in the NWSL, right?
Well, yeah.
Talk about what that experience was like and that transition to more of a conservative thinking going on a college campus in Anderson, South Carolina, where it may have been a lot more condensed. What was that like for you, and how did you kind of navigate through that?
It was culture shock. I'll be honest. Like, I didn't know where Clemson was. I had to look it up, like, once it started becoming a thing. And I was like, all right, it's in upstate South Carolina. I was just ready for a new opportunity, and it was Clemson. I was just going there, but it was definitely culture shock. You know, small town college vibes, but I will say the only time I'm thankful for this, I felt that I got discriminated against was in South Carolina. And it was just like two dudes like emulating and making fun of me and my fiance holding hands. And I was just like, okay, like that's unnecessary. But, you know, that was something that I had never experienced before. So, I mean, and there's a reason I'm bringing it up, because it's stuck with me, right? Because I just like, I had never experienced that before. But I think, you know, being in Clemson, you know, even though it's a small college town, it's in the South, there was enough people I was surrounded with that you know, helped me, you know, feel like I could be myself, and that, you know, I was empowering others by being myself. So it was definitely hard. I feel like maybe there was times where I held back and I really shouldn't have, but I just felt like, you know, judgment would have been there. But I think, you know, overall, just like being on the Clemson campus and, you know, getting introduced to athletes who identify in the LGBTQ plus community empowered me and really motivated me to help them. And you know, push you, because in college it's hard. Like, I mean, I can't even imagine, like I was struggling in college too with that, you know, like, I can't even imagine having no one to talk to or someone to identify with. And honestly, I didn't have that, you know, in college. So if I could be that source for someone, like, I was going to be it. And even if it meant, you know, getting discriminated against or, you know, someone saying something, because at the end of the day, the impact overcomes the hate. And it was a great experience, and I'm glad I had that experience. But now I'm definitely happy to be in California, where it's very LGBTQ plus friendly out here. So it was a great experience, and I'm hoping that I left an impact on some people out there.
So you mentioned a couple times about talking to student athletes and being a support system for some of them who may not be ready to come out or are still unsure of their sexuality. I guess I'm curious how that conversation comes up. Is it just you sharing your experiences and being open about who you are that opens the door to have those conversations? I'm just trying to think of if people want to have a support system and are unsure of how to go about that, what advice would you give them?
You guys ask really good questions. Yeah, first and foremost, I think social media helps that, right? Cause, I mean, I have pictures of me and my fiance on social media. So, you know, if someone happens to come across my page or, you know, follows me and they see that and they're like, oh, well, Brittany has a girlfriend, and, you know, that's something maybe like I would want one day. So I think just one, there's a connection beyond, you know, the field. And then again, it's just being around the team enough where, you know, conversation can happen, right? And, you know, there's a lot of them, you know, would ask me questions, and, you know, I'm an open book. Like, I'll tell my story to anyone. So I think just, you know, when questions are asked of me, being open about it. And, you know, Clemson, the athletic department is super tight knit, and, you know, everybody knows everyone. And so, you know, just word of mouth, and, you know, knowing that there's someone else in the department who identifies as LGBTQ, like having Megan as another graduate assistant was super helpful. And, you know, just building a support system out in that way. So yeah, I think it's, if someone wants to talk about it, especially a young student athlete, I was there to talk about it, you know, and it didn't necessarily have to be about them. Like, actually, a great story I have that's not related to an athlete per se, but a coworker. I'm pretty sure, the first LGBTQ person that he met. And now he was working with me. And so he came from a Christian background. He wasn't really in the know. But he asked questions. Like, he asked me questions and was genuinely interested in me and my fiance. And I thought that was the most genuine thing ever. And to this day, he's one of my best friends. Like, he, you know, he asked me questions about, you know, his best friend came out while we were together at Clemson, and he called me and was like, what's the best way to respond? And that, to me, like, you talked about guts, Darius, like, that takes guts to ask uncomfortable questions. And then just having, like, being willing, you know, to maybe feel embarrassed by asking the questions, but, like, change wasn't made because, you know, we're scared. Like, you have to have guts. So I think, like, a moment like that with a friend, and to see his growth, and, you know, he's gotten me, like, you know, pride gifts. Like, that's evolution, and that's growth, because someone was willing to step outside of the box that they knew their whole life, because they met someone that they wanted to be friends with. He asks questions, and we have a great relationship to this day. So no, that wasn't an athlete, but I think that can go across the board for if that was an athlete, right? So that for me was a really, really cool moment that I go back to, because seeing growth in someone is one of the coolest things, whether it's a partner or a friend or a family member. And being there for that growth is awesome. And especially when it comes to, you know, religion and sexuality. It's nice to know that, you know, there's individuals out there that can have open minds and know that, you know, here's a great human. Like, who cares who they love or what they identify as, right? Because that's, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
I'm glad you said that, because you pretty much were reading my mind as I was thinking of this next question is, what advice would you give, or how do you think people outside of the LGBTQ community can support and be an, I hate the word ally sometimes, but how can we be of better service and better humans to individuals in the LGBTQIA plus?
How much time you got, Darius?
You have 45 seconds. I'm just kidding. No, it's take whatever time. I think that it's important to, because I think that there's kind of a misconception. Sometimes it's a lack of knowledge or information on, you know, how we can be good humans to, you know, individuals. So I just want to get your perspective on what you think from your perspective, how we can be better humans towards humans in the community.
Yeah. Honestly, this has kind of been on the forefront of my mind just because of, you know, the political climate and, you know, all these things being said about the trans community and the LGBTQ community. You know, that stuff is really, it gets exhausting to read, and I try and stay away from it, but it's kind of hard when, you know, our jobs have us embedded in social media so much. I think it goes back to having an open mind, right? Because I think a lot of people just think that one way is right. It's their way. And that's it. There's nothing else beyond that box. And that's where the hate and the prejudice comes from. So you have to have an open mind. If you don't have an open mind, like, we're never going to have change. And, you know, I think that there's definitely, unfortunately, people that we're never going to change. But if the majority can change, then, you know, then that's success right there, right? Being willing to ask the hard questions. Like, if you don't know something, don't make assumptions. That's one of my biggest pet peeves. Making assumptions about a group of people, an individual that you know nothing about. So we gotta get rid of that. We gotta toss that out the window. Assumptions. And then, I mean, I feel like if this goes for you know, beyond the LGBTQ community, if you see someone that's being bullied or discriminated against, like, you're not helping by being a bystander. Like, step up and help your brother and sister, you know, like, say something. So there's a lot of things that I'm hopeful for. I hope I see, you know, massive change in my lifetime, but I think the more people can just be themselves and, you know, live authentically without fear, you know, the better. I just wish people would stop, you know, correlating things that aren't correlated. You know, human rights are human rights. Like, we're all human beings. We're all born the same way. Like, we all have upbringings, you know, struggles, triumphs, challenges, everything, you know? Yep. So I don't know. I just, the world can be a harsh place. I just think, you know, support one another, just be a freaking good person and help where you can. Like, if I had the means to do so, like, I'd give anyone the shirt off my back, you know. Like, I wish I had endless money to just, you know, help everyone in need, right? But if you don't have, you know, the means to do that, like, kindness is free. You know, being there for people is free. And then, you know, hopefully you get to that point in life and then you can give back in that way, right? So yeah, just, I wish people would just open their minds and, you know, just ask questions, be around people that are different from you. And you know what, if you don't agree with it, at least just don't be an asshole about it, you know, plain and simple.
Absolutely.
Get off soapbox.
we really haven't talked about your current role at all. So we'll jump into that. Talk about your...
It's not as interesting as I was.
Yeah, I was going to say, forget that.
Absolutely. which is great, right? But talk about your current role with your current club and kind of how you go about, you know, doing your business and opening up doors for other people in the industry.
Yeah, so moved across the country in March, drove with my fiance, my dog and my dad in my Toyota RAV4. And that was an experience in itself. But I think, you know, my first job out of college was in the MLS and NWSL. But prior to that, I was with, you know, Sky Blue. And I told you guys, really love the dynamic of women's soccer. But unfortunately, in the NWSL, the opportunities have just been super far and few between. And the stability hasn't been there. Like, I've always longed to get back into the women's game, but I needed either a team or just a league to get into a better place before I was ready. So, you know, enter San Diego Wave. You know, this is year two. Last year, they were a playoff team. And you can talk endlessly about, you know, Alex Morgan and all the players on that team. But I think just the organization in itself was just something I wanted to be a part of, and getting back into the league was something, again, that I've longed for. And so when this opportunity came, I just knew I had to take it. I knew that there would be regret if I didn't. And I love Charlotte. Like, leaving Charlotte FC was probably one of the hardest decisions I ever had to make in my life, in my career, because the people I met there, the relationships I made with the team and my coworkers. But I've, as you guys have heard in the last 56 minutes, I just, nothing can stand in the way of my dreams. And like, I'm going to go after something no matter what, even if it means moving cross country. So yeah, I started the week of our home opener. I was Airbnb hopping, living out of a suitcase, the same one for a week. So that was an experience, but, yeah, I think the best part about this team right now, one, you know, the access I get is incredible. Like, you know, our head coach, Casey Stoney, is like a walking quote book. Like, everything she says, I'm like ready to run through a wall. So, you know, being able to be in the locker room for those moments, you know, for the last like 3 months, just being around the team, you know, day in and out. And for a lot of these NWSL players, like, this is the first time they're feeling stability, like, truthfully. And so, and that's even, you know, stability from the team, but also just like from a content perspective, like, there's a lot of teams and there's growth and there's a lot of teams that are great at it right now. A lot of NWSL teams just haven't had the strongest content backgrounds. And I'm happy to see that a lot of teams have stepped up, but I think there's still a lot of work to do. And we all know, like, this day and age, like, social media sells. It's going to sell you tickets. It's going to drive revenue. It's going to bring in new fans. It's going to keep your fans engaged. So I think even being able to give them that was a surprise and in a high quality way. But that makes me feel like what I'm doing is impactful. And so, not to say what I was doing in the MLS wasn't impactful, but MLS has, across the board, incredible content creators, like some of the best in the industry. And while the NWSL is now like climbing to reach that, I think for me, I knew my standard and I knew what I was capable of. And I felt that once I started putting that out for the team, that, you know, everyone else was going to want to, you know, step up and be great. And I've seen some incredible stuff from teams, you know, this season. So, you know, it feels good to see that and see the growth, and to feel like what I'm doing is actually making a change and actually growing, you know, the San Diego Wave brand, the NWSL brand, and even our players individually. Like, they deserve those platforms and opportunities as well. So it's been great so far. And, you know, team has been pretty successful on the standing chart. So, you know, the World Cup is happening soon. So we're losing a couple of our international players, but, you know, we have a really strong team, and a lot of depth and a lot of stories. So it feels great to be a part of this organization. Definitely glad that I moved out here for it.
So earlier you talked about access, and I'm curious, having done basically two soccer startups back to back here, and I'm sure things are improving. You're trying to work on things as you get through your first season here. But what is it like to build a program and establish the foundation to build on over the course of the next couple of years as you grow and build the department?
It's a lot of work. And thinking back to Charlotte, it was like, okay, what equipment do we need? So putting in an equipment order. And so you're basically setting, you know, what equipment, you know, people who come after you are going to use. And also just like establishing the voice and the brand. And, you know, obviously that goes hand in hand with social media as well, and the copy of tweets and captions. But again, like everything I told you about my style, like I wanted to bring that to Charlotte. So, you know, it was tough in an inaugural year to accomplish everything you wanted and dreamed for. But just again, let's storytell around these guys. Like, let's make sure that people know who they are off the field. And, you know, I think they've done a great job of that. Like even after I've left, they actually, I have to give a shout out to the, they did a piece on one of the players, Guzman Carujo, who tore his ACL, but he was our captain, incredible player for us last year. And, they did a two-part, kind of like little docu-series of his recovery and stuff like that. So just stuff like that. And making sure that we're leaning into the right things and not trying to, you know, do too much, you know, overkill with effects and stuff like that. So even here with the wave, like I'm bringing my same style. And I think for the women's soccer audience specifically, they're hungry for those kind of storytelling, anything. So you know, that's something that I'm hoping to continue to do here. It's a little bit tough because I'm the only full-time creative on staff right now. So I'm wearing a lot of hats, but all the more fun for it. So I have a lot of hopes and dreams of things I want to accomplish here. But right now it's just one, putting out incredible match footage and making sure I'm capturing all the big moments. But, you know, capturing our fans and those kind of moments and just continuing to get, you know, San Diego behind this team and supporting. And I think we've done a really good job at that. And I think our attendance and our numbers would prove that and validate that.
Advice for creatives who are trying to get into the industry, who are in the industry trying to, you know, elevate in the industry, and how do you go about giving advice to other creatives as they reach out, or do they reach out?
Yeah, I've had a lot of people reach out, and it's hard because I want to get back to every single person I can, because I remember being in their shoes, and you know, you sent a message to someone you looked up to and you just hope they saw it or responded to you. So I always try and be approachable. And even if it's messaging them back, you know, something short, I hope to do that. My advice goes along with everything you guys have heard for me. I think being authentically yourself in this industry is going to carry you far. And it's carried me throughout, regardless of not having certain things in my skill set that maybe, you know, I would want or other, you know, people would want. I think the more you can be yourself, the better. I think betting on yourself in this industry is huge because, you know, so many people could go for one job, but if you're betting on yourself and you're going above and beyond, you're making yourself stand out, like, guarantee you get an interview, you know, like, and don't be afraid to reach out to anyone. Like I remember sending cold emails to athletic departments, like for months, just telling them who I am. And that's kind of how the Clemson opportunity happened for me. Was I applied for a job and then I emailed their creative solutions director and was like, hey, this is who I am. This is what I'm about. And then, you know, months later, you know, he emailed me and was like, we filled the role, but we'd love for you to be a grad assistant. So find what makes you great. If you know what makes you great, like, again, just lean into that. Don't try and be like other people. Be yourself. Don't always follow the trends. That's not to say that those aren't, you know, good to follow. But yeah, I just think the industry can be so exhausting, but you know, keep a good support system, and just don't stray too far from who you are, and you know, just go after what you're passionate about, and yeah, and don't be afraid to reach out to other people and ask questions. And I feel like a lot of people in this industry are open to providing advice, but even if someone doesn't respond back to you, like someone will. So. Yeah, I feel like that was kind of like a meh answer after everything I've just poured into you guys, but it just goes back to being yourself, really. and don't try and change who you are just because the industry is ever changing.
Oh no, that was a great answer. A lot of good pockets of things to do. Being authentic is very important, and building relationships. Like some people, they'll send out cold emails or Instagram. Oh, hey, can I pick your brain? It really, like, the people that will catch your attention, or my attention, or Justin's attention. It's really about relationship building. Like, you will get more responses if you approach it in building a relationship with that person instead of it only being transactional. So I think that to add on to what you said, like, yes, it is great to be authentically yourself and, hop in DMs, but find people that you could, sometimes less is more, finding, five or six people that you can build a relationship with, have 15, 30 minute conversations with, and see what you can get out of that so that you can go back to the quote unquote lab to put it all together. That's one reason. I mean, one way that I was able to, build my career is tapping into a few people and just picking their brains, not just for how can I get a job from this person or how can I get a job from that person, but actually building relationships with people that now I've known for like over 15 years. And I can actually pick up the phone and say, hey, you got 5 minutes. A regular person that only reached out for a job, I'm probably not answering that. But somebody that has taken the time to build a relationship, it goes a longer way. So,
for sure. No, I love the word that you said, don't make it transactional. Again, you've learned that I'm a deep person, but something I just thought of, going off of what you just said, impressions are everything. Like I will remember the way you've treated people, the way you treated me, negative or positively. And so, that goes a long way. And the sports world is big, but it's also so small. So I would say make sure that you are leaving good impressions, because I think that also will carry on in your career, because there's individuals that I've worked with that, if I have that, when I have the opportunity to hire, like, I'm going to them, I'm reaching out to them to apply, so it's like, and that's not to say that, other people won't have the opportunity for the job, but, knowing good people, first and foremost, the talent, I think for me, talent can be taught and a skill set can be taught, or you can grow into it. But being an actual good human being that provides to the culture and that contributes to the culture, that's everything. Culture is everything. So if you're someone that is going to be a cancer of the culture, then the opportunities are going to be far and few between. So make sure that you're leaving good impressions on people, whether you're an intern, whether you're a volunteer, whether you're a manager, a director. Like, people, there's that quote, right? Like, people will remember how you treated them, not necessarily what you said. So just remember how you treat people, and know that that goes a long way in the industry as well.
Well, Brittany, thank you so much for spending time on a Friday with us where you could have been, enjoying the amazing San Diego weather.
The waves.
The waves. In San Diego. But yeah, thank you for being you, for being a person who is a game changer in the industry, a person that's a leader in the community, and keep doing amazing things, on and off the job, and keep, connecting with people and telling those stories, because as much as social media and 15 seconds and special effects and all this is cool, is it memorable? Well, how long will people, feel that? How much will you, invoke a feeling or an emotion for the long haul? And so keep doing that. from one storyteller to another, keep being amazing.
Thanks, Darius. Snapping my fingers to that. Yes. Thank you for having me, guys. This was great. It's crazy. I feel like sometimes these podcasts can be a little bit therapeutic for everyone involved. So thanks for the opportunity. And it's great to meet both of you too. So hopefully one person listening, you know, gets impacted by this. So thank you again for providing this platform for me.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the sports creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.